welcome to North Coast Church. Today, Pastor Chris Brown is bringing the teaching to you, so open up your Bibles and listen in.
Hey, glad you are here today. If you're just joining us, we've been in a series called How to Fast Track Your Career. Just looking at, if you call yourself a Christian, a follower of Christ, a Christian, how's that going to affect your job? And we've been taking 3 weeks so far going through it. Today, before we get out of this series, we got 1 week left after today. We thought, you know what? We got to hit it. We got to talk about at least some sort of ethics in the workplace. We all have jobs, or most of us have jobs, and yet we realize on day one of this, we definitely all have a mission. We all have a calling. We all have an assignment. Whether you're a stay-at-home mom, whether you're retired, whether you're a stay-at-home dad, thank you for those of you that wrote in cards going, hey, where's the love for stay-at-home dads? And so to both of you, whether you're stay-at-home dads, whether you're stay-at-home moms, whether you're retired, whether you're unemployed, we all have an assignment. And how do we play that? And so we thought, before we get down to the end of this series, we got to hit probably the number one flaw that we all have in common. In fact, without any study or research on it, I will go out on a limb and say this is probably the number one, if you want to use a Bible term, the number one sin that we all have in common. And it has to do with lying. And I don't know how many of you have had kids, but if you had kids, you realized you never taught them how to lie. They're self-teaching. We come out that way. From the time they could put sentences together, they start figuring out how to get out of trouble and how to get things they want through lying. And one of the first rules as parents you have to lay down is, don't lie to me. Now, you got some kids that are better than others, and some of us are better at lying than others. That's nothing to be proud of. It's something that we're going to struggle with more. I happen to be an incredible liar. I am. I could use words, story stuff. I have so many friends that go, we don't even know whether you're telling us anymore, because I'll start on some story and about 5 minutes into it go, nah, I'm just totally joking with you guys. And they're like, what? Why do you always do that? And I'm like, it's just fun. I can do it. I've got one of my daughters who is terrible at lying. I hope she's always terrible at lying, but as I know with most kids, she'll probably get better at it. But she is a terrible liar. She'll lie straight to our face, and I'll look at her and tell, you are just lying. And then she puts her head down, and I'm like, can you say it one more time? I can't say it. I'm like, you are just a terrible liar. I love that about her. But the other two, geniuses at lying. I mean, you can get a kid from the earliest age, 3 years old, brownie all over the lips, chocolate wedged into every gap in the tooth. And you go, did you eat one of those before dinner? No. Like, are you serious? Because you're still chewing on something. It's just gum. So I'm about to take you into the bathroom, and I want you to look at yourself in the mirror. But before I do that, I'm going to give you one more chance. Did you eat a brownie? No. You go put them up on the counter, look at the mirror. There is a chocolate explosion on their face. Now, what do you think? Dad, I didn't eat a brownie. I'm like, man, you're good. Really bad, but good. From the earliest on, and it creeps into everything we do. Most of us find out we're good at it. Most of us find out lying is how you get through life, how you get out of trouble or get things you want. It's how to work the system. The problem is, as you grow up, it doesn't change, and it falls into everything we do, and we get into workplace now and go, what do we do about lying? And more importantly, what does the Bible actually say about lying? Because we kind of blow stuff off. In fact, we have cool little terms for, oh, that's just a white lie, which is better than a darker lie, I guess. I have no idea. That's just a little white lie. Or that's just a half-truth. And I've never got that. That's a half-truth? Have you ever committed half-adultery? He's like, oh, they committed half-adultery. And I'm like, well, tell me where that line is. What's a half-truth? Or holding back information and just saying part of it, well, it's an outright deceit. It's a lie. And yet as you get older and as it creeps into what we do, now it's a challenge. I remember when I was a sales coordinator for a general engineering corporation, we had a job out here in the Oceanside area that had to get done. Because of the time schedule we were on, because of an opening on Monday, because of the general contractor we were with, we were going to work Saturday and Sunday. Now this meant we had to get all of our material lined up ahead of time, and it was going to cost extra to open up the asphalt company, industrial asphalt at that time on a Sunday, and make sure we can get hot mix. Oh, this was going to cost us. To make sure that we got all the trucks delivering the material to the job site on time on a Sunday, this was going to cost us. And yet, because of the relationship we have with the contractor, the job itself, in the long run, this is going to pay off. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to nail it. The problem is, the inspector would only come out on Friday afternoon. and he wasn't going to come out on Saturday and Sunday. And for us to go through with everything we had to do on that weekend, that inspector needed to sign off on it. We needed to get a green stamp on that thing and go. Well, after all the subs were in and out of the site, after I pulled up and looked what our guys did, I was walking around ready to meet this inspector, and I realized what was supposed to be done wasn't done. 90% of the job was good, but a whole upper area was supposed to be graded. There's supposed to be little stakes in the ground with little feathers coming off and show that this thing is level, this thing's graded, ready to go. And it wasn't done. And I knew there's no way we're going to get passed on this inspection. And now we have an entire weekend of stuff loaded up. I'm up a creek. And I just started adding up the amount of money we're going to lose, the relationship we're going to lose, the general contractor we're going to lose. And just then my boss pulls up. And he comes out and he goes, "How's it going?" I go, "Not good. Look at this. That was supposed to be." And you can make all the excuses in the world, but it's not done. And he thought for a second. He goes, "You get a bunch of stakes out of the back of your truck. You throw them all over. There's a bunch of bike marks around here. Neighborhood kids have been around. You just tell them that kids with bikes were around here. They're pulling up all the stakes and playing with them. It's level. Swear to it. See if we can get this guy to sign off. I'm out of here." And he gets in the truck and he leaves. And I have a decision to make. So I went to my truck. I got the stakes. I threw them all over the place. And when that inspector showed up, I showed him the side. I was hoping he'd miss it. He didn't miss it. When he caught it, and he's like, whoa, this isn't supposed to be. I said, "Hey, here's the deal. We've got our guys telling us, and I lied like crazy. We got kids with bikes. They pulled up all the grading stakes. This thing's good to go, man. I'll swear by it. We'll get on in this thing." And in the young 20s, all I was thinking about was my job, my career. It's good money at that time. It was a great job. It's what I wanted to do. I got to get my little house on the river with the boat so I can take my wife and family too. And this is just part of getting there. And in the big picture, it doesn't hurt anything. It's not like it's going to hurt the job. It's just getting an inspector off our back. Yes, we're going to have time to do it and fix it. We just don't have time to bring him back on. So in the long run, I can justify the whole thing and say it was nothing about job safety or the way we were going to do the job. It was just the way we needed to get things done. Well, I wasn't a pastor at that time. I wasn't really walking with the Lord at that time. And yet that's always stuck with me because it's the only time in my life I've ever lied. And do you remember the only time you ever lied? How many of you would just say right now, "You know what? I've lied before." Just so we're all, come on, Edge Video Cafe, hands up. Yeah. How many of you though would say, "You know what? I don't think I've ever lied." See, and now you're a liar. We're all in the same boat. So it's good. So we can all jump in and go, okay, so what's the Bible say about this? I've often gone back and thought, what if I would have done it differently? What if I would have just flat out told the guy, "Hey, here's what we did, here's what we didn't do, but I'll swear by the fact that here's what we're going to do to make it right. But what if it would have cost my job, and what if?" And see, when it's a little kid and it's about brownies, it's one thing. When it's the way you do business, it's quite another. Three reasons why we lie. I want you to look at them. Three fun stories. The first one's going to be in Acts chapter 5. If you got a Bible today, we're going to be turning a little bit. So we're going to Acts chapter 5. Back of the Bible is the New Testament. Look for the guys' names, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and then Acts. It's spelled CTS, not with an AX. If you're looking for an Acts, you're going to be all day long going, "I haven't found the dumb book." The Acts, A-C-T-S, of the early church or the disciples. See, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John tell us the story about Jesus, how he lived, what he taught, his miracles, that he claimed to be the Son of God over and over and over and over again, and that he said he was going to prove it from rising from the dead. It's why we have Easter and celebrate it. The book right after that is called Acts. It's short for the actions of those that were following Jesus, the actions of the early church. And we're just in chapter 5. And the church is just starting. Jesus said, "Now I leave it to you. You are supposed to tell others about me, everything I taught, everything I commanded you. Live this thing out." The church is God's plan A. There is no plan B. And right off the beginning, the church knew that one day Jesus was going to come back, but they thought it was really soon. So they started selling off all their property, all their homes, all their land, all their businesses. I mean, why do you need property, a home or business if Jesus is coming back? So they sold it all off, and people were bringing their money to the church going, "Here's everything that I just sold. It's the church's." Well, when you do that, other people around are like, "Bravo. Man, that person's committed." And there's a couple that sees this going on. And they want to jump in on the act. And we have Acts chapter 5. "Now a man named Ananias, together with his wife Sapphira, also sold a piece of property. With his wife's full knowledge, he kept back part of the money for himself. But he brought the rest and he put it at the apostles' feet. Then Peter said, Ananias, how is it that Satan has so filled your heart that you have lied to the Holy Spirit? Get that, underline that, don't let that go, that you have lied to the Holy Spirit and have kept for yourself some of the money you received from the land. Didn't it belong to you before it was sold? And after it was sold, wasn't the money at your disposal? What made you think of doing such a thing? You have not lied to men, but to God. There it is again, underline it. You haven't lied to men, but to God. So Ananias comes and says, hey, we sold the land for $200,000. Here it is, $200,000. And Peter goes, really? Really? You sold the land for $275,000. You pocketed $75,000 of it. Now, it was your land. It was your money. You could have done anything you wanted with it. You could have kept $250,000 of it and just given $25,000. You could have tipped the church $1,000 if you wanted to. He said, but to show up and say, this is all that we sold it for? Are you kidding me? You're not lying to men. You're lying to God. And twice that's mentioned. One of the first things we got to get through is understanding that it is God who sees and hears every motive, every word from our mouth. The lies that we're doing, it's not about business. It's not about clients. It's not about boss or personnel or employees. He said, this is being done in front of God. When Ananias heard this, he fell down and died.
Oh. Well, that's kind of harsh. Wouldn't that solve things?
That'd be a little different. If you tell your kids, don't lie, liars die. They're like, I didn't eat the brownie. Man, I told them. Be a little different in the world. If when you lie, you just died. I mean, how would that change your workplace? You'd be walking in Monday, stepping over people, going, what happened in here? One guy left in the office, not answering the phone. He's like, I'm not talking to anybody. Are you kidding me? That's a little harsh, don't you think? When Ananias heard this, he died. And great fear seized all who heard what happened. You think? The rest of the church standing in line is like, I'm going to change some numbers here for a second. You kidding me? I didn't know that was on the line. Great fear seized everyone who heard what happened. And then the young men came forward, wrapped up his body, and carried him out and buried him. About 3 hours later, his wife came in. Not knowing what had happened, Peter asked her, tell me, is this the price you and Ananias got for the land? Yes, she said, that's the price. And Peter said to her, how could you agree to test the spirit of the Lord? Circle, highlight, underline. There it is again. Look, the feet of the men who buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out also. And at that moment, she fell down at his feet and died. You shouldn't laugh at that. And then the young men came in, finding her dead, carried her out, and buried her beside her husband. Great fear seized the whole church and all who heard about these events. Ooh. What? Okay. I get saying, for what you did, you don't get dessert for the next 3 nights. And as a parent, I'd applaud you. All right, you got to teach them about the brownie. That's one thing. But sudden death? Don't you think that's a little over the top? Now, this is a one-time thing. As far as I know, no one else just got struck down dead for lying. And the only way I can put this into any type of perception is just to understand that this is the very beginning of the church. This is the very beginning of what we do here on the weekends. This is the very beginning of how we celebrate our walk with God and His Word in our lives and how we learn it. And from the very beginning, God drew a line in the sand and said, no, I want people to understand how serious this is. That serious? Are you kidding me? Death? Imagine going to that church. You think it changed the way people talk for the next few days? Yeah. You take your kids to church, and on your way in every day, there's two tombstones. Now remember where liars go, Jimmy. And you're like, whoa. Man. Somewhere at the beginning of starting the church, God right off the bat said, I'm not going there. I'm not tolerating this. And yet they have done what we fall into so many times. Three reasons why we lie. Number one, we lie to make ourselves look better. Don't we? I don't know about you, but I need all the help of looking better I can get. And since most other people aren't going to help you look better, it's up to you to make yourself look better. And so if it needs to change, some little stuff I say about myself or what I've done or what I've accomplished or what I put down on a resume, I mean, so be it. We lie to make ourselves look better all the time. We lie to a little guy in the kiosk at the mall. We're we're putting an application for something and ask how much you make. Well, this isn't an IRS form. It's just some 17-year-old kid in a kiosk. I don't want him to know what I really make, but if I circle this, man, we take opportunities all the time to make ourselves look better. You see it as little kids all the time on the playground talking about what they've done or what they could do or about who their dad is or about how much money they have. My kid's now in first grade, and Barrett comes home and tells me stories all the time. Dad, I need more money. Why? Jonathan says he has $315. I'm all, Jonathan doesn't have $315. He said he did. Barrett, do you lie sometimes? Yeah. Do you think Jonathan lies? Probably. I do too. Tell him to bring $315. If he doesn't have it, forget about it. I said, how'd this get going? Well, I told everybody that I had $18 saved up, and Jonathan said he had $315. And you see how it goes. As little kids, you know it. You sit around and you top each other's stories. You make yourself look better. As adults, it's not much different. We'll get to how this plays out, but reason why we lie, number two. Turn to 2 Kings 5. Now we're jumping all the way to the beginning of the Bible. There's a 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles. So there's six big books you're going to find. 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles. Chronicles starts with a CH, not a K. If you're not used to this, bring your Bible. We'll tell you how to turn, where to go, so you can see it for yourself. It's God's Word. You should get a copy. 2 Kings, chapter 5. 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles. 2 Kings chapter 5 is an amazing story. I hope one day we can jump in and do the whole thing. There's a king called Naaman. There's a man called Naaman. Naaman is the general of the enemy's army. So Israel at that time's got an enemy, the Arameans. The general of their army is Naaman. Now, you're a general of an army in that day and age. You are second or third in the kingdom. I mean, you've got some serious position and authority. The problem is with Naaman, he contracted leprosy. We're not told how. But now he's got leprosy. So it's ruined his entire status, his entire social line. Well, he's got a servant girl who's a girl from Israel, and she tells her master, you know, we have a man that can do miracles in our country. They call him a prophet. His name's Elisha. He can cure people of stuff like this, only from God. You ought to go see him. So Naaman loads up his donkeys, his horses, his camels, his wagons with gold and silver and the finest of clothing, and he takes off to find the prophet. And he's got messengers looking out ahead. And as they find out where Elisha is, Elisha sends him back and says, hey, tell your master not even to come to my house. Just send him to the Jordan River. He washes himself 7 times in the Jordan River. He'll be clean. And word comes back. General, general, we found the prophet. Here's what he said. And Naaman is ticked off. He expected to show up and have the man of God come out and lightning come down or a big light from the sky and heal him miraculously. And when he finds out he has to wash in a dirty river 7 times, he's humiliated. And he's frustrated. And he starts this rant. We have so much better water in our country. Why did I come all the way here just to dip myself in some cesspool? And his servant's wise enough to say, if the prophet had told you to do something difficult, would you have done it? He's like, yeah. Well, then why don't you do the easy thing? Just obey. So he goes to the river, dips 7 times. The leprosy's gone. So now he sends a truckload of gold and silver and clothes to the prophet. And here's where the story comes in. 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 15. Then Naaman and all of his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Please accept a gift from your servant. And the prophet answered, as surely as the Lord lives whom I serve, I will not accept a thing. And even though Naaman urged him, he refused. If you will not, said Naaman, please let me, your servant, be given as much earth as a pair of mules can carry, for your servant will never again make a burnt offering or sacrifice to any other god but the Lord. But may the Lord forgive your servant for this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Rimmon to bow down, and he's leaning on my arm, and I bow there also, when I bow down in the temple of Rimmon, may the Lord forgive your servant for this. Go in peace. Elisha said. So the guy comes with all the gold and silver and all the garments and says, hey, take anything you want. And Elisha goes, no, far be it from me. I'm not taking the enemy's plunder and I'm not taking your wealth for something that God has done. Just go. And the guy goes, well, can I take as much dirt from your yard as I can? Yeah, it's free dirt day. Knock yourself out. And he loads up a couple donkeys with dirt. And yet his explanation is, I want to start worshiping your God. I want to build an altar to your God, but I don't want it even on our putrid soil. I want some soil from Israel to start my offering with. But can you forgive me? There's times where as general, I have to take the king into our false god and he bows down to that idol and I stoop down with them to help him up and down. And Elisha says, don't worry about it. Your heart's following God. Do your job well. And he sends him off. Well, this entire conversation is overheard by a servant. And after Naaman traveled some distance, in verse 20, Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, said to himself, my master was too easy on Naaman, this Aramean, by not accepting from him what he brought. As surely as the Lord lives, I'm going to run after him and get something from him. He's like, are you kidding me? You don't accept anything? They didn't gold on them their trucks. And we just gave him dirt? This was a bad exchange. So Gehazi hurried off after Naaman, and when Naaman saw him running toward him, he got down from his chariot to meet him. Is everything all right? He asked. Everything's all right, Gehazi answered. My master sent me to say, two young men from the company of prophets have just come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver, two talents of clothing, or two sets of clothing. By all means, take two talents, said Naaman. And he urged Gehazi to accept them. And then he tied up two talents of silver in two bags and two sets of clothing. And he gave the two... And he gave And he gave this stuff to the servants, and they carried them ahead of Gehazi. And when Gehazi came to the hill, he took the things from the servants, and he put them away in his house, and he sent the men away, and they left. Then he went in, and he stood before his master Elisha. Where have you been, Gehazi? Elisha asked. Your servant didn't go anywhere, Gehazi answered. But Elisha said to him, was not my spirit with you when the man got down from his chariot to meet you? Is this the time to take money to accept clothes or olive groves, vineyards, flocks, herds, manservants or maidservants? Naaman's leprosy will cling to you and your descendants forever. Then Gehazi went from Elisha's presence, and he was leprous, as white as snow. Aren't you glad that one doesn't happen? I mean, I'll take leprosy over sudden death, but if this is the way God works for liars, we're a messed up church. There's a group of eight of you leprous people meeting. And it wouldn't be led by me. Harsh. Gehazi saw a way to do this. The reason why we lie, number two, we lie for personal gain. He saw the contract that was made. He saw it was willing to be put on the line, and he realized we can do better than this. He saw the bottom line, and he realized we can pad that. He saw the amount of billing hours, and he realized, oh, we can double that up. That's just standard business practice. He saw the exchange and realized there's opportunity to get more. Not ethically. I'll need the lie to do it. But there's opportunity to get more. Oh, I'm glad the Bible's filled with pages of liars. I don't like the punishment of the first two. Sudden death and leprosy. Somewhere in the midst of this, we start picking up this thing where Elisha said, hey, wasn't the same spirit that's with me? I saw you when you met the guy in the chariot and he got down. And Elijah said, this wasn't done in secret. This was done in full knowledge of the Spirit. Reason we lie. Number three. Second book in the Bible, Exodus 32. Exodus 32. Verse 19. Israel has been enslaved under the bondage of Egypt for some 400 years. God sent a man named Moses to let his people go. He leads them out of the promised land. They cross the Red Sea. They're in the wilderness. Now Moses says, get ready. God's going to show up tomorrow. And sure enough, everyone comes outside the little tent city. And tomorrow God falls on the mountain with thunder and lightning and earthquake and rumbling and smoke billowing up like it's a volcano. And then a trumpet sound. And then it speaks, Moses. And everybody's like, ah! And it was amazing. And Moses goes up into the cloud and the lightning and the thunder. And Moses is up there for 40 days. God's telling them the laws, the rules, the commandments he's writing down. And the people just saw one of the most amazing displays of God that anyone in history has ever seen. And 40 days later, they're done with it. 40 days later, they're over it. Man, I hope you're not one of those that just comes trying to get a God experience or living from experience to experience. A weekend experience at North Coast doesn't last 40 days. I promise you that. This weekend experience will last until the time you get to your car. The experience is done. And people were hanging on an experience and it's over. And they come to the number two. His name was Aaron. He was left in charge and said, we don't know what happened to Moses. We haven't seen God in 40 days. We need a new God. And here's what number two does. He takes off all their gold and earrings. He puts it in the fire. He makes a little golden calf. He shapes it. He molds it. He puts it in the front of the people and say, this is the God that saved you from Egypt. And they start this huge dancing and worship and ceremony of the idol and orgy, and all this is happening. And Moses comes down from the mountain right when the party's going on. Exodus 32:19. And when Moses approached the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, his anger burned, and he threw the tablets out of his hands, breaking them to pieces at the foot of the mountain. And he took the calf that they had made, and he burned it in the fire, and then he ground it in the powder. He scattered it on the water, and he made the Israelites drink it. And he said to Aaron, what did these people do to you that you led them into such a great sin? This is going to be a great line. When I get to heaven, this is one of those I'm going to rent. I want to watch this scene. First of all, I want to know how Moses said that line. I mean, he just took everybody out of Egypt. He's got a million plus people in the wilderness. They're ready to go to the promised land. They just saw this amazing display of God. He comes down and you've got a drunken orgy to a golden cow in your camp. And it's just been 40 days. And when he breaks it down, melts it, makes people drink it, he finally squares off with Aaron. And I'm sure Moses has a big vein in his forehead that's popping out by now. What in the world did these people do to you to make you do this? Would they tie you up? Did they hold you down? Did they drug you with something? What in the world? And now Aaron's got an answer quick. See, he wasn't ready for Mo to come down in the middle of the party. And so here's the best he can do. Do not be angry, my Lord, Aaron answered. You know how prone these people are to evil. You got really bad people. And they said to me, make us gods who's going to go before us. And because this guy Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what happened to him. And so I told them, if you got any gold or jewelry, go ahead and take it off. They gave me the gold. And I threw it in the fire and out popped the baby cow. That's your story? No. That's all I got. I work with corrupt people. You know how bad these people are. And they came and I didn't know. I took the gold, I threw it in the fire, and the cow walked down. The golden cow walked out of the fire. And all these tools here with your fingerprints on it, coincidence. Are you kidding me? Oh, we learn this one. It's the first lies we learn. Reason three why we lie. We lie to avoid negative consequences. Oh, we will lie to get out of trouble. We will lie to get out of the jam. We will lie to cover up the fact that we dropped the ball. We will lie to a client for the reason why his job didn't take so long, or the reason why we can't show up, the reason why we accidentally double booked. We have projects on the same day. Hey, you know what? Sorry, your material was supposed to be in on Tuesday, but it hasn't come in yet. Man, I know we had it all scheduled to go. I'm going to have to give you a call back. I'm so sorry about this. Whew. You know these people I work with. They're bad people. We do anything to push the blame from self to others. We do anything. I don't know. I sent you an email. I don't know why it didn't come through. Look, yeah, I got it right here. I sent it 2 days ago. We will do anything to cover our butts. It's a bold-faced lie. There's probably more reasons, but we lie to look better. We lie for personal gain. We lie to get rid of negative consequences. It's why we fill out our time cards, for those of you that are on it differently. Why? Well, you justify it. We can almost make every lie work. The job's still okay. This isn't hurting anybody, but it's just a way for a little bit better financial gain. It's why we'll put down our taxes a little bit differently. It's why when it comes time to refinance, I had friends tell me, Chris, I know you don't qualify for a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, but if you just do this, we can get you into a sweet deal. I'm like, well, that's not right. That's just the way to do the system right now. It's the way it's set up. Well, I don't want to get stuck into a 30-year fixed lie. That's how I got to see the situation. Or the speeding ticket, a guy who looked a lot like me got in Arizona, driving a van a lot like ours, with a license plate number that was the exact same, that was sent to my house. But I had people tell me, just write back, it's not you. They have to send someone to find out if it's you or not, and they dismiss it. I go, but my arm's out the window. I'm looking at this little box going, what's the flashy thing all about? Because no one told me in Arizona, robots can arrest you, and that's just stupid. At least here in California, you got to be pulled over. Their little boxes just go flash on the freeway. And I'm like, what, a paparazzi? That was crazy. 4 weeks later, I get a picture of me on family vacation. I'm like, that's one of the best pictures of me I've ever taken. Just turn it back in saying, it ain't you. To get out of negative consequences, to simply get ahead. Oh, we do it all the time, don't we? So then I struggle with, so what do I leave you with? What can I challenge you with when it's become such a part of almost who we are, of almost how we do standard business practices, about how we build clients? And I realize just getting up and saying, hey, well, lying's bad, boys and girls. Watch, listen. Don't lie, lying's bad. We've taught our kids that. Unfortunately, we also taught our kids lying's totally acceptable in some situations. When the phone rings, and hey, tell them I'm not here. keep moving. Three reasons why we shouldn't lie. Turn to Proverbs. Another easy one to find. In the middle of your Bible is Psalms. You can't miss it, but it starts with a P. P Psalm has 150 chapters. Just to the right, at the end of it, is Proverbs. So find the big book Psalms, easiest book in the Bible to find. Go to the right, Proverbs 6:16. You know what? While I'm going there, let me do a shout out to parents, because that little thing is bugging me in my head. When we lie what school district or what our address is or use a family member's address to make sure our kids get a better school, I get that. Oh, as a parent, I get that. But we are setting precedents daily in front of our kids. It's okay to lie for good reasons that you can justify. And it is unfair of us to stand and say, no, mommy and daddy get to lie and justify it. You don't get to justify yours. Until what age do they get to justify theirs? And let's just be careful about the words we use, about our example in front of kids. And when it comes time to making a hard call of, you know what, it would go better, you'd be in a better school, you'd be with your cousins, but we can't lie about this, sit with your children and tell them why. We don't do this. Or if you have lies that your family's living under, if you have lies by the way you're doing finance, if you have lies that your kids know about, then at least don't punish your kids for lying.
Oh, man, that's not going to be recorded. Proverbs 6:16. I love the way this starts. There are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him. It almost starts like a Monty Python thing. God hates these six things. Seven really bad ones. It's kind of written. It's a Hebrew poetic style. Man, there are six things God hates, seven that he just detests. It's hate plus one. What's on that list? Before you read, seven things God hates. Oh, if you had to list just seven, the top haters. Well, there's big ones on the list. Watch where it goes. Number one, haughty eyes. A lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood. Are you kidding me? Haughty eyes is someone who's proud, someone who thinks they're better than others. A lying tongue, and then hands that shed innocent blood? You're putting someone who lies, a lying tongue, ahead of cold-blooded murder? I got to have a little issue with this list. And God goes, you know what? Let's make a list of things that I hate. I want you to see it. Man, I hate people who think they're better than others, who because of where they've been positioned in life, what I've been blessing them or where I put them, they think it's their own doing and they look down on others or rule it over others. God says, I hate that. Man, I hate that with the passion. You know what else I hate? I hate a lying tongue. I hate people who just choose to lie. Oh, I hate someone who kills innocent people. You're like, they're in the same list? And it's above it. Watch where it goes. A heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil, a false witness who pours out lies, and a man who stirs up dissension among his brothers. Out of the top seven things that God hates, lying is on the list twice. It didn't just make the number two spot, it made the sixth spot also.
somehow this has got to sink into us. Somehow we've got to get to grips where our Father sees these little white lies, these half-truths, the lies of omission, but just the way things need to be done. And He goes, not with my people. Oh, I hate this. And I know this isn't an all-inclusive list. I know it's not like a Sports Center top 10. Maybe they're not ranked in order. But maybe the reason He goes there is because when I ask how many of you lie, we all raise our hands. He goes, this is going to plague us more than anything. If I ask you, don't raise your hands because some of you are here, but if I ask you, how many of you have murdered? We have people in our congregation that have murdered. I thank God for what He's done with broken, murdering, lying, sinful people. It's the only reason I'm alive today. But my bet is, if I ask you to raise your hand, how many of you have murdered? It's fewer than those of you that have lied. Maybe close at North Coast, but it's fewer. Edge got us beat, but we're there. And maybe that's why He ranks it. He goes, you know, I hate lying. It is so common. It is so prevalent. It's just seen as the way to get things done. And twice it's on the list. Look at chapter 11, verse 1, a few pages to the right. A few pages to the right, chapter 11, verse 1. The Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights are His delight. He just took it to the marketplace. He just took it to the corporate world. He just took it to the city streets where all the bartering is done. He just took it financially. The dishonest weights. The little metal piece you put on your scale that says 3 ounces, even though it's 3.2. He goes, man, I hate it. He says, I hate dishonest business practices. I hate that you use measures, schemes, lies to cheat people out of money. I hate the way people go about doing their jobs if it involves deceit or lying. He says, I hate dishonest scales. Oh, but accurate weights and measures, those are God's delight. But someone that can actually do business with integrity, with honesty, he goes, man, I love seeing that because it's so different in the world today. Does it mean maybe you have to leave some on the table? Maybe. Does it mean maybe you won't get as much personal gain? Maybe. Does it mean at times you won't look as good as you want to look? Probably. Does it mean at times you have to say, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm not sure what happened, but we double booked this. I do have all your material. Everything's ready to go. There's no way I can get a crew out there. You want to drop us? That's fine. I'll make it up to you as best as I can, but this is just what happened. Oh, I would love to go back that day and tell the inspector, 90% of the job's done. We didn't hit this. I will stake our company's reputation on the fact this will get done. Here's everything ordered this week, and can we go? Maybe he would have signed off on that. Maybe he would have said, you know what? I'll show up tomorrow, 9 o'clock, before the pour. It's better be done. Or maybe I would have been fired. And I don't know. I do know on that day my job was more important than my walk with God. I do know on that day my reputation was far more important than my character. I made that commitment easy as soon as I got the stakes out of the back of the truck. And somehow we miss this in so much of our Christian living and doing, God's feeling about how we do work and our dishonest scales. Last place, chapter 12. Next chapter, 12:17. It says, a truthful witness gives honest testimony, but a false witness tells lies. Reckless words will pierce like a sword, but the tongue of a wise brings healing. Truthful lips will endure forever, but a lying tongue lasts only for a moment. There is deceit in the hearts of those who plot evil, but there will be joy for those who promote peace. No harm will befall the righteous, but the wicked will have their fill of trouble. You see, the Lord detests lying lips, but He delights in the men who are truthful. Three reasons why we shouldn't lie. Number one, God hates it. He hates it. He abhors it. He considers it abomination. He detests it. He goes, I just hate lying. Somehow we forgot that lying made the Ten Commandments for Pete's sake. I mean, I know it's number 9. It barely squeezed in there. But thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. You're not lying about your neighbor, about people around you. That makes a Ten Commandment. We forget that the sin of lying is what killed Jesus. They couldn't find Him guilty of anything. So they come to Him with trumped up charges. He claims that He's the Messiah. And He goes, I am. That's truth. He also said he's going to tear down the temple. He's going to come and destroy our city. And that's what they find him guilty of. Now in this part, we say, well, Chris, aren't there some people in the Bible that lie and get away with it? I mean, isn't it okay to lie at times? If I'm hiding Jews from Hitler and they knock at my door and ask if I'm hiding Jews, what should I do? Well, I think I would tell you, let him go. Hitler's dead, been dead for a while. It's safe to come out. I don't know why you're hiding Jews. I married one. We got three kids. We live in the open. Life's going pretty well for us. So when you come to me with, well, if I'm hiding Jews, I'm like, are you serious? Are we going to go to that argument? And yet still, we got times in the Bible, the Hebrew midwives. When Pharaoh said, kill all the Hebrew babies in childbirth, they saved the babies. And they came back to Pharaoh and said, Hebrew women are strong. By the time we get the call and get to their house, the baby's already delivered and they've hit them. And God bless those women for lying. Rahab the prostitute. She comes to know the one true God because she has a place, a brothel prostitution. Foreigners come in and out all the time. It's a great place for her to hide the Israel spies, God's people. And when the authorities come to her house and say, are you got men from Israel here? She had bold-faced lie. She hit him up on the porch and said no. Back in the book of James, God said that act right there solidified her salvation, showed her faith in God. Great lie, baby. Way to go. There's a story in the Bible that talks about a father and two sons, Isaac and Jacob. God says, hey, Isaac's supposed to be the father of the nation, or Isaac and Esau. And Isaac's supposed to be the father. I've just messed this whole thing up. Jacob and Esau. And he's supposed to be the father of the nation. So he goes in, and when his brother's going to give the birthright to the oldest son, Esau, a bold-faced lie to his father. No, no, Dad, I'm Esau. Because his dad is old and blind and in poor health, he doesn't know the difference. And God blesses that and makes the nation of Israel out of that. And so I do. I come to places in the Bible where it seems like God tells people to lie. Samuel has to go anoint David as the new king because Israel has a crooked king. And Samuel says, woo, when the bad king finds out I'm going to anoint a new one, he'll kill me. And God said, well, tell him you're going to give sacrifices then. Not really a lie. We will do sacrifices, but there you're going to anoint the king. And so I wrestle with that. These are stories they didn't teach me in Sunday school. And yet I think it's really clear when you look at Scripture, there is a law of human life that supersedes the law of lying. And when human life seems to be on the line, if someone breaks into my house saying we're killing everyone here, is there anybody upstairs? And I know my kids are sleeping, I'm saying no. No one's here. And there seems to be throughout the Bible a law of human life and protection. But I would say most of us in our daily jobs don't face that decision, do we? And there is a law for God's character and God's ultimate will at times that has to go against the truth of a situation. But those are rare times where God specifically told someone to do something. So here's how I would wrap up that in the Bible. If there is literally, physically, someone's life on the line, I would think hard about telling the truth on that one or not. And I got some biblical examples of that. If God personally comes down and personally tells you to do something that goes against the truth, do it. Now, if you've got either of those two situations, you're good. For the rest of us, we're back in the study. Number one reason why we shouldn't lie, God hates it. Number two reason, last place we look is the book of John. If you left your Bible in Acts because you're like, I'm not going to turn anywhere, well, good luck. It's one book to the left. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Last place we look, John chapter 8. Oh, we're running out of time. I'm kicking this in the high gear. John chapter 8, starting at verse 31. Jesus is talking to the crowd that's following. So many people have come to know Christ. So many of the Jews have come and believe that he's the Messiah. Many put their faith in him is verse 30. Now, verse 31 of John chapter 8. To the Jews who believed him, Jesus said, if you hold my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you will know truth, and the truth will set you free. And they answered him, but we're Abraham's descendants. We've never been slaves of anyone. How can you say that we can be set free? They're blinded to their slavery. We've never been slaves to anyone. You've been slaves to Egypt, to Babylon, to Persia, to the Greeks, to the Romans. I mean, you've been slaves your entire existence. And they're so in bondage, they don't even know it. And so Jesus tells them, I tell you the truth. Everyone who sins is a slave to that sin. Now, a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know you are Abraham's descendants, yet you are ready to kill me because you have no room for my word. I'm telling you what I've seen in the Father's presence, and you do what you've heard from your father. He goes, look, you got to listen to God. Stop listening to your father. And this is confusing them, as it's confusing me. And they go, wait. Abraham's our father. If you were Abraham's children, Jesus said, then you would do the things Abraham did. As it is, you're determined to kill me, and a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. Abraham did not do such things. You are doing the things your own father does. And now they're really confused, like you're confused, and I'm kind of confused, going, what's the whole daddy issue going on here? And they say, we're not illegitimate children. They protest, stop calling us bastards. We don't like it. We follow Father Abraham. The only father we have is God himself. And Jesus says, if God were your father, you would love me. For I came from God, and now I am here. I have not come on my own, but he sent me. Why is my language not clear to you? Because you're unable to hear what I say. You belong to your father, the devil. Whoa. And you want to carry out your father's desire. He was a murderer from the beginning. Not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. He goes, I want you to know the truth, and the truth will set you free. I want you to walk in the truth, and that truth will set you free. Instead, your life is based on lies, and you're following lies. It's how I know you're not following me. Lying, Satan's native tongue. When you lie, you speak his language. Second reason why we shouldn't lie. It's an indicator of who we're following. It's an indicator of who we're following. It's why God hates it. He goes, you're speaking the language of my enemy. You're speaking the words of my enemy. I know you say it's just the way things have to be done. I know you say everyone does it this way. He goes, but you're speaking a language I hate. And truth or lies is an indicator of who we're following. Colossians 3, 9 and 10 says, don't lie to each other. You've taken off your old self with its practices. You've put on a new self, which is being renewed in the knowledge of the image of its creator. He said, the moment you became a Christian, you left the old way of doing things and lies. You've taken that off. The new self that you put on is supposed to be in the image of God. God doesn't speak lies. So thirdly, reason why we shouldn't lie, we become slaves to it, and it robs us of our freedom. We become slaves to it, and it robs us of our freedom. Jesus says, if you hold to my teachings, you really are a follower of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. How many of our marriages are just bound up with lies? Because once it started, you needed another, and another, and another, and another. How many of us, when we walk in the workplace, we just put on a suit of lies because it's the way everything's done and the trappings of it? Oh, the way it creates so much bondage in our life. And we can't be who we truly are. We can't be what we truly do because we've got our lives so surrounded and chained and bound with the lies that we live in. And Jesus says, no, I've called you to be people that walk in freedom and walk in truth. And this is killing you. That's why God hates lies. He goes, it's from the enemy's camp. It's his tongue, and it binds my people, and you're supposed to be people of freedom. And at this point, some of you are thinking about how you work and how you do life, and you're going, well, you don't understand the consequences. I get that. And taking it to work, let me give you two things. And let me challenge you. We can't put a price on our integrity or obedience. And I know you go, man, I need this income, or wow, I need this job, or if I told my boss I was going to stop being honest, or why stop doing practices the way that we do things, they'd fire me. I can't make that choice. No, you've already made that choice. You've chosen your job over following Christ. You've made that choice clearly. You've already made it. You just got to figure out how to live with it. I love the way Proverbs 19 says it. A poor man is better than a liar. God says if you can't get rich honestly, change your job or stay poor. It's better to be poor and have your character and have your integrity than to have a job and lose your character and lose your integrity. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and yet forfeit his soul? You see, North Coast, our reputation is what people think about us. Our character is what God knows about us. And so many times we will choose our reputation over our character. And when it comes to the issue of these little white lies, of half-truths, of just being a little deceitful about not divulging full information, God says, I hate dishonest business practices. And lastly, we can't afford the consequences of lying. We just can't. It hurts us. It hurts others. It interferes with our walk with God. And there is no way God is going to bless a financial situation that's based on lying. There's no way God can bless a home that was based on lying. There's no way God says, hey, here's the job I'm going to give you, but you have to lie on the resume to get it. Don't get stuck in a 30-year fixed lie. And the beauty about this book is it is filled with liars that come to know God's grace and redemption. And he says it's an epidemic. It's common to all. Today, just an encouragement, a shot. I struggle with it. You struggle with it. Things to keep in mind next time we're forced. Do I go with the truth or do I just fudge this a little? Isn't that a good word? Fudge. Ooh, we love fudge. Hot fudge, hard fudge, cold fudge, fudge bar. It's good to fudge. Next time, just look at it. Do I tell the truth or do I blatantly sin against God? Not my company, not man, but the Spirit of God. Father, help us in this one. Man, we challenge. We're challenged because we all desire to look better and make ourselves look better. We're challenged because in this day and age, we all want a little more in personal gain. We're challenged because the main tool we use to cover up our own shortcomings and pitfalls is lying, to get out of jams and consequences. God, may we be people, whether students in school that do our paper and our work with ethics and honesty, to the way we do our jobs, to the way we demonstrate this in front of the next generation in our homes. And God, may you give us your strength to be people that speak your words, not Satan's. In Jesus' name, amen.
So before we close, if you want more information about this teaching or any other teaching, just go online, www.northcoastchurch.com. Or you can come see us at 2405 North Santa Fe Avenue in Vista, California. Check the website for times of services. And now let's get back to some closing thoughts from Pastor Chris.
You know, as you go, let me just encourage you. It's that time of year where we're signing up for growth groups. And I tell you, the number one thing that helps me in areas like this with integrity and character is my growth group. In the world that we live in and how we work, a lot like Aaron said, man, you don't know how bad these people are out here. If you just come to a service a weekend and think that's going to counteract everything else you face, man, you got such an uphill battle. Growth group makes me do my homework because I wouldn't do it if I wasn't in a growth group. I'll be honest about that. Can't lie. And I'll be honest, I'm one of those guys that didn't want to be in a growth group. I felt like because of my job, I probably had to do one. And yet for the last 7 years, man, I love that group. And just being there, taking this stuff to another level, it's what keeps us from being a crowd on the weekend. And growth group is where we become a church. And if you're part of the crowd, we're glad you're here. But man, I encourage you, sign up today. Find a group close to you. I know you're too busy. I know you don't have time. I know the kids have got crazy stuff. I know your work schedule is going to keep you from making it. And I know you're not that type of person. So just go sign up. We're going to pick up there next week for our last time in this series. Until then, turn around, greet a former liar. We'll see you next week.